Hey, Home Slices. This is part two of a two-part episode where I and a special guest review Waiting to Exhale from 1995. If you have not listened to part one, go back to wherever it is you listen to podcasts and find it. You should definitely listen to that first. And then in a really quick scene, Bernie is at Gloria's shop asking for like a major haircut. Gloria is hesitant and thinks Bernie will regret cutting it all off. And culturally, this sentiment feels true to life. The narrative has changed a little bit. But as a young child, I remember there being a lot of additional social capital that a Black woman would have if she had long hair.
Yeah.
I don't know if you...
It is a very real, I mean, hair in general, if you even start at the nugget, you know, Black women in particular, we get judged for our hair. And there are certain expectations and things that, that people impose upon what we should be doing with our hair. So I really appreciate the scene, as short as it is. It busts open a really big social dialogue about, which I feel is so rooted in an external, like it's not, I mean, Gloria is attached to Bernie's hair because she's been doing Bernie's hair for a decade or more, it comes out. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like, you know, Bernie, don't do this to yourself because this is going to have consequences beyond this beauty shop. And Gloria knows that. And I think Gloria not having hair is also representative of, you know, her hair being short, not having hair, her hair being cut short is representative of her kind of being cut off from the dating scene and her cutting herself off from, you know, trying to be beautiful, trying to be out there in the same way that the other female characters are in the film. So, you know, I think it's really powerful between Gloria and Bernie, and Gloria being like, you don't, you know, you do not know what you are actually asking here. It is far deeper than me just trimming your hair.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. I didn't think about any symbolism related to Gloria's hairstyle.
But just beauty, like hair and coiffing hair is female beauty. And so if she's removed from that space of trying to put herself out there and be beautiful. I don't know. That really speaks loudly to me.
Yeah. Well, Bernie is sick of arguing and basically takes some scissors and starts chopping already. And so the damage is already done and Gloria goes along with it reluctantly. Mm-hmm. And so later the ladies are at the club. Bernie has a new hairdo.
I will point out everyone is smoking. Everybody's smoking inside. Everybody. And I'm like, woof, look, times change.
These early and mid 90s movies, smoking is so prevalent. Like when I reviewed Love Jones, they were smoking all the time. And I reviewed Candyman, they were smoking. I was like, they were smoking at restaurants. I was like, you can't, no.
What is happening here? Yeah, everywhere, all the time.
Yes. So they're at the club. The ladies are at a table. They have a discussion about Bernie's new haircut when she walks away to find her dance partner.
I don't like it.
Yes. And then Savannah's character was like, oh, actually, I think it's cute. And then Gloria's like, well, yeah, she looks good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so which side anyway, y'all?
Yes.
Keep y'all's mind.
So Bernie goes over to a man named Herbert Webster. He is a married former pro ball player. And she, you know, decides to dance with him. Bernie is feeling very spicy. And I feel because she has a new hairstyle and because, of course, clearly of what she's going through, she has this kind of invigoration to herself of like wanting to feel desired and sexy.
I like her vibe in this scene. It's like, you know, why should you be at home crying on the couch? Like the healing is going to start with getting back out there a little bit. So, and she's making an effort. And boy, is she getting judged by the ladies of like, she out there on the floor with a married man. Like, which one of you has not been with a married man in the past like 3 days? So I don't get what you're, I don't get what y'all on about.
That's true. At this same club, Robin sees Michael with another woman. Now, this scene is actually quite confusing to me, and I'm open to hearing what your thoughts are on it. But when Robin sees Michael, he's there with another woman, and we find out that Robin fired him a week ago, which I was like, I didn't realize she was in a position to fire him, which makes their relationship even more inappropriate.
Yeah. That's true. I didn't go that far. Like the scene with them and, you know, I took him as the subordinate because she's standing up giving the presentation. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't read too much into the, you know, what is going on. I was just like, okay, Robin is done. She's done. And that's okay.
The problem I had was that she was visibly upset. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out why. She didn't think he was cute.
Right.
He wasn't good in bed. He was undermining her at work. Like, why are you mad? You should be happy that he is out of your life and moving on.
She mad because she want him to be home alone. She's out having a good time and she dumped him and he's there with somebody else. She's there alone. So like, you know, why does he still get to have fun? That's true. I didn't read that much into it, but I was like, yeah, I could see that though. She's like, why is he out having a good time? I just dumped him.
That makes a lot of sense because as I was thinking about like, why is she upset? I was like, is it because he made empty promises to her or that she's mad that she even slept with him in the first place? Or
I don't think it's that deep. It's just, I'm over him and he's already moved on.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
That makes a lot more sense. I'm glad you're here to talk about this.
I got to call out one line from Gloria, too. Mm-hmm. When they're, you know, it's kind of debatable. Gloria's not having a great time because she's just not out on the market trying she's to get with some people. Yeah. And she's like, shit, I could be home watching Good Times.
Yes.
I have felt that on more than one occasion. I'm out and I'm like, you know, I could be on my couch having a much better yes. time and better company.
I hear that. Yes. So in this next scene, we meet Troy. Robin is riding in a truck with a new guy named Troy. She's only known him for 3 days and already feels close to him, whatever that means.
Yeah.
They.
I think we figure out what that means later with the whole barbecue scandal.
Yes, yes. They arrive at a party and Troy, who is played by McKelty Williamson, you brought up earlier that he is, you know, Bubba Gump. Forrest Gump. And when he gets in this place, he is acting a fool. And I love it. I love the way he walks into the party and starts dancing. It's so funny to me. It's so funny. He's like dancing, acting a fool. He's loud. He like bites her on the butt. And
that
I'm
is
like,
the thing. I didn't get... Because I didn't make it a serial, like I didn't catch his vibe coming in, but that moment of like, what does he do to her backside? In that, like, what? Super weird.
Yeah, he's very strange. And I'm like, where are you finding these guys? Like,
that's very true. She does find very unique individuals to spend, to share her life in bed with.
Yes. And Robin is also wearing an interesting dress. Do you have
apparently that dress became a whole phenomenon, which I did miss, mm-hmm. and a little bit of research that dress came back. But cute. I think mm-hmm. over time, the big bows would have become something a bit less massive, but cute. And she looks good in it. She looks good at that party.
Yeah, I don't know why this is going to sound weird. It reminds me of like something a little bit clownish. And I can't put my finger on it.
There's kind of like the jester diamonds. Like, yes, I get that yes. vibe. Yeah, I can yeah. easily translate that across. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, this dress is kind of cool with the knots and yeah. the midriff showing. It's cute. 90s fashion, right? So eventually Robin kind of is looking around the party. She's not there with anyone that she knows, but she does come across... She does come across Troy purchasing some illegal substances, and she is like, ugh, like, I don't have time to deal
yeah,
with this.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, after he makes his purchase, she demands that they leave, and she's like, we need to get out of here now. And when she is more aggressive, Troy is like, oh, that turns me on. This man is awful, but he's so funny. It's not cringy to me.
I appreciate you pulling out some nuance from Troy's yes. character, because I was like, get rid of this loser. Because Ed was not like even his vibe showing up when he does that little weird burping into her backside thing. I'm like, just Robin, move on.
Yes. I don't know what he did in those 3 days that she felt close to him. I don't yeah. have no idea. Yeah. So next up, we see Savannah at work. She's listening to her voicemails and she receives a call from the Allstate insurance guy. It's a man named Kenneth who will be in Phoenix next month and would like to see her. In her voiceover, we hear her say that she really liked him, you know, in a past life, and that he treated her well. She calls her mother because she knows that Kenneth got her number from her mom. So her mom gives her some very awful rhetoric about what it means to be a woman and to be in relationship with a man. And it is very awful. Like
very dated. Yeah, very
yes,
dated.
Super dated. Like, Kenneth is married, but the mom is like, well, obviously he's not happy if he want to talk to you.
I don't remember if it's here or later, but she's like, he's just in a bad situation. Like, it's not a bad, he's married with two children. Like, that.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, well, every woman needs a man, and you ain't no exception, Savannah. And she also tells Savannah that she needs to get off her high horse, which to me means, like, lower your standards.
Yeah, like- yeah, exactly. You know, you do yes. want perfection, and you can't expect that. So date whoever.
Yeah.
And be happy.
Yeah. Right. And it's not like Savannah isn't actually doing that. Like, it's she true. Is dating whoever. Kind
of. Anyway. I'm on it, Mom. I'm on it.
Yes.
Cool down.
Savannah, who apparently has probably been hearing this type of stuff her whole life, ends the phone call and hangs up the phone and tells herself in a voiceover that when Kenneth comes, she won't give in to him. Sure, Savannah, because mm-hmm. you haven't bought into the desperation at all. mm-hmm. Next up, Troy takes Robin home. And they're at Robin's apartment, and she is not happy with him, obviously. He's saying that she's making a big deal out of nothing, and he tries to initiate some adult activities. But when Robin turns him down and says, like, I think we need to cool out, like, we need a break or whatever, he mentions that, oh, this is bad timing because my mom wants to meet you at a barbecue this weekend. And I'm like, what is wrong with Robin's ability to set boundaries?
Yeah, like, the barbecue? No. No. No.
After 3 days?
No, I'm good. And that's okay if you're not ready to go. So you should be in no position to have to defend, like, why am I going to a barbecue at your mother's? That's okay.
Yeah. She quickly overlooks his drug use and weird behavior and even says that she could be a good influence on him.
Yeah. Her little voice over, maybe if we got to know each other better, I might be a good influence on him. No. That is beyond even the realm of wishful thinking. That is lies.
Yes. Yes. And she just seems very enamored with the idea that he wants her to meet his mom.
Yeah.
So it's always like these, just ignore these red flags and like cling to like this one little thing or detail.
Yeah. I got to point out too in this scene that they bust out a 555 number. I just love that. Yes. When I was a kid, that you always get this, you know, call it 555. All the numbers in the movie started with 555. And my parents had to explain to me, they're not real phone numbers. So if you call them, it's so that you won't actually reach a real person. I was like, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They do use the 555 number. So yeah, in the next scene, Bernie and Gloria are at a carnival or rodeo, something along those lines, mm-hmm. a state festival, something like that. And Bernie reveals to Gloria that John Sr. has assets that she knew nothing about. She lists off a few of them. And I'm like, how much money is this man making? He has a vineyard in Arizona. She didn't even know they grew grapes in Arizona.
Yeah, exactly. 200...
Yes, 200 acres of farmland, I think, in California. An apartment building, like, among others. And it's like... You want to give me $300,000?
Yeah.
And you have all of this? Okay.
The absurdity of the scene, I think, is really underscored by they're like at ostrich races.
Oh, yes.
There are like ostriches in the rink, mm-hmm. like chasing, and with everything they're saying is absurd of what she's discovering about the assets that he's been hiding. And they're watching ostriches race while we do this. And I have to highlight the call out of Sally Jesse Raphael. This mess will get you a week on Sally Jesse. The shoulder pads, the glasses frames, it all came back for me. I've not considered that person in a good 20 years. So thank you, Sally Jesse.
Yes. I used to watch the show when I was younger. It was a crazy show. Yes. They have a quick laugh because Bernie says, like, the key to avoiding all of this is not getting married. And then Gloria is like, girl, I thought you had the answer. Like, you know, you could have been in all the magazines if you had that answer. And she proceeds to list off a bunch of magazines. It's a cute little scene. And so we switch over to them being spectators in the little ostrich races or the rodeo, whatever you want to call it. And Gloria asks Bernie if she's been messing around with Herbert, you know, Herbert from the club, the married guy, right? And Bernie says she only spent one evening with him and she wanted, you know, to be intimate with somebody. And she described it as watching paint dry.
She's like, I needed to get laid, and I did. Men been doing this shit for years. I tell you, it was like watching paint dry. I love that. Would never describe intimacy as watching paint dry.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like almost none of the characters have satisfying experiences.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. And I feel like that is like an accepted, honestly, I don't feel like that is something to be questioned as it comes out in this film. Like, there is a general notion that sex is not satisfying for women. And like, who cares if it isn't? Because the men are the ones who, you know, need, like, no biggie. Like, that's the way it is. And it just, it passes under the radar like that in this film as well.
She also says that Herbert has since started stalking her, calling often and even showing up at her house unannounced. And it's like, okay, it was one time and it was awful. And now he... Now he feels some sense of entitlement, or it's strange, but it's on brand.
An entitlement, straight up entitlement. Yes. You pinned it. Like, hey, baby. Yes. Like, no, hey, no.
You're married. And I'm married, too. Jeez,
and this is my house, and my children are in the backyard. Like, peace out. Later.
Right. And when Gloria tells Bernie that, you know, she's wrong, you know, Bernie is like, you know, this is why I didn't want to tell you. So Gloria kind of has this moral high horse a little bit that we see. And I feel like some of the ladies feel like Gloria can be a little judgmental. But then Bernie says something like, I'm not like you, Gloria, because apparently Gloria can be without the touch of a man for an extended
period of time. Bernie has determined that, Gloria doesn't need intimacy. And it's like, ooh, that hurts coming from a friend. And while as much as Gloria's judgment of Bernie is tied up in what Gloria has refused, you know, refused to allow herself to have in terms of relationships with men. Like, she does heap a lot of that onto Bernie as judgment, which is kind of funky. And then Bernie snaps back and it's like, you know, I need a man. You've decided you don't need a man. I do. And it's like, ooh, that's a little unfair too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were both kind of wrong in that moment and they experienced this kind of awkwardness at the rodeo.
Yeah.
So, I like that we're seeing that everything's not always like super fun. In their friendship.
Again, dimension, like depth and dimension. Yeah. We ain't always out just drinking and being cute and having a good time dancing.
Yeah. Sometimes we're at a smelly rodeo hanging out.
With ostriches and getting into it a little bit, getting down to it a little bit.
Right. And so in the next scene, Robin and Savannah have a phone call. They talk about Troy. And the thing that I'm starting to realize is that these ladies are pretty insightful and have good advice for each other, but they are awful at applying their own wisdom.
Robin goes deep. I'm like, yes. Robin, you got stories to tell, woman. Like, you, this is not your first time around the block, but it just doesn't manifest in any kind of useful way for you, unfortunately.
Yes. Well, in this moment, Savannah is trying to talk Robin out of going to the barbecue. And we also find out that Robin can't find her wallet. And Savannah puts two or two together, but Robin, not so much. Robin ends up clicking over.
Call waiting. Phone. Oh, yes. Shout out to the call waiting and the 555.
And on the other line is Russell, who will be at her house in 15 minutes. And it's like, well, he was already on his way, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But Russell, we see him later, is played by Leon. And Leon is like a heartthrob in the Black community. People love Leon and think he's so attractive. And he's not unattractive. I just don't pine after him the way some people do. But yeah, he comes to her apartment. Robin says that she really loves him in her voiceover. They have good chemistry, but Robin keeps falling for his sorry excuses. And she's like, you know what? Men make mistakes. I'll just forgive him. So she's gone back to Old Faithful.
Hey, you know, I ain't gonna judge a lady.
Yeah. In a brief scene, we see that the ladies attend church together.
This is just it's a gorgeous, brief. It's super brief. Just mm-hmm. taking a half step back cinematographically, mm-hmm. this scene is absolutely gorgeous. Like, I love, the scene with Troy showing up in his leather vest is actually also very nicely shot with a crane. Mm-hmm. But again, beautiful crane shot. We start with the blue sky with a white puffy cloud coming down over the steeple of the church. You hear the sound of children and kind of joyful flowing out of the church on a Sunday. It's a gorgeous kind of a reset because there's all these dialogues mm-hmm. and all this stuff. So you get to exhale, you get to breathe for a moment. Get mm-hmm. a little bit further away from people. We're not, you know, close in people's intimacy. And I really appreciate the scene for that. It's culture setting. Exactly. We move through the same spaces together at like a foundational mm-hmm. level, in addition to all the craziness going on in our lives. We still church going, women. Thank you very yes. much. We might have seeded some doubt in the first 45 minutes to an hour of this film, but we are indeed church going women. And just that community moment, in a very beautiful community moment. It did give me a moment to breathe a bit in a lot of the intensity mm-hmm. of the exchanges and trying to figure out like, what is going on with these people?
Yeah. And also, I love their outfits. They yes, had the church hats on. And they were hats. All very colorful.
Yeah.
Yes. And right. And so quickly, we switch to a scene where John Sr. is returning the kids to Bernie after a weekend visit. John Jr. doesn't even hug his daddy. He's a little bit older and kind
of hugs his daddy. Yes. Snubbed. Boy's like, no, I'm glad to be back at mommy's. Like, don't you know, yes. Let me away out of the car.
Yeah.
Daddy got
yeah.
snubbed.
The older kids, when they know what's going on, usually one their relationship with one parent at least suffers. And so John Jr. is like, I'm good. The little girl, though, she's like, thanks for this doll, daddy. And she gives him a hug. She kind of goes over her head a little bit. So mm-hmm. Bernie is staring daggers at this man. I don't know if you'd notice her stare. She is like
ice.
Yes. Ice, baby. Yes. So in another iconic scene, love this scene. It's hilarious to me. Troy shows up to Robin's house. And she talks to him from the patio.
This is my favorite scene in the whole film. From Troy's outfit to Robin's outfit to their dialogue. And he comes up with every little, like, can I use the bathroom? he tries everything. And they end up throwing, like, pumpkins at each other. So break it down, Kiara. What is happening in this world?
Yeah, so Robin, who is, like, chilling and kind of sunbathing on her patio, is over it by now. Because Troy comes over. He's wearing a leather vest with no shirt underneath. And Troy's 2 hours late to take her to this barbecue. And is clearly on some illegal substance. His behavior, his slurred speech.
A little different.
Something is clearly going on, right? And so she learns from him, like, that he has a son, a detail
Your
that he
son?
Never revealed
what?
Before.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, he almost 13. So what? Like,
oh, okay. Thank you for that information.
Yes. And she's like, no, I'm not going with you. This is over. You can't come in. And then, of course, like you said, Troy does the little ploys of like, oh, you're not going to let me in. I got to use the bathroom. She's like, nah, don't even try it. Troy does this weird monologue about how Black women don't know how to accept good treatment from Black men, and then they wonder why Black men go out and date white women. And I'm like, this is supposed to be good treatment?
I love this. He's like, do you have any idea how many women would like me to take them to my house to meet my mother? I'm like, what? I don't actually. What? Who would say that? I have no idea, Troy. Enlighten me.
Right. And then he uses the B word a few times. Uh-huh. And there is what appears to be an orange tree nearby. And there's some oranges that have fallen to the ground.
Are they oranges? Okay. They look like little pumpkins to me. Maybe my TV screen isn't big enough.
But he picked one up. This part of the scene is so funny to me. He picked up an orange and got ready to throw it. She's like, don't throw that up here. Don't you throw that up here.
He's like, have a fruit bowl, tramp. He starts throwing the oranges. Oh, also, while advising her that she should be more careful who she picks up at the grocery store. Which brings us a little background on maybe the genesis of their relationship, which was helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in this scene, I love that Robin is standing up for herself, but I feel a little bit suspicious that this is partly because Russell has re-entered her life. Mm. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I'm linking it up with the scene where she gets a call. I don't remember who she's with at that point, where she gets a call on the phone. I think it's a later scene. They're getting into bed because he's just been with his wife and he comes home and gaslights her like crazy. Exactly. So I didn't read that.
But yeah, she is done with Troy. They throw some oranges at each other. She actually makes contact with one of the oranges.
Nice.
With him off scene.
Notable.
And so after all this happened, Robin calls Savannah. And Savannah is like, well, I guess we solved the mystery of the wallet, right? And Robin is like, what, you think he stole it?
Oh, Robin.
Yes. And so it's funny how sometimes they highlight the age difference and the maturity difference between some of the ladies. In another iconic scene, this movie is full of them. Gloria watches as a neighbor is being moved into her neighborhood. So she goes across the street and she kind of starts off being a little nosy, asking the man who's unloading the truck what he knows about the people who are moving in. Interestingly enough, she also assumes that the guy moving in is married. And
that's like a little racist. Well, no, I started to think half step back, like, there's a Black dude. He must be the mover.
Yes. That's true. I didn't even think about that. But the guy who's unloading the truck is named Marvin King. He is played by Gregory Hines. He is a widower, and he's looking at Gloria like a snack.
Which is gets to all this kind of mouthy stuff in the scene that's kind of weird, but we'll get to that later.
She's also looking back at him like a snack, so they are clearly attracted to each other. And she invites him over for dinner for what she calls a few little leftovers, but sounds like an extravagant soul food dinner. A little collard greens and cornbread, some candy yams, a little potato salad, fried chicken, peach cobbler, and a few slices of ham. And
that is the buffet at my last family reunion. Like, that is basically no joke. I do not have that in my fridge on the regular to offer as leftovers. So go, Gloria, point.
Right. And so Marvin turns her down because he's unpacking and, of course, will be too busy. But then when Gloria makes a self-deprecating remark about her body, Marvin says, you know, he likes ladies with a little meat on their bones. You know?
And that's when the snack reference comes up. We get a real close-up of Gregory Hines' mouth talking about how he likes a woman with a little meat on her bones. And I'm like, oh, let's zoom out. So good.
Gloria is pleased to hear this and says that she's going to send a plate over with Tyreek. And so we have a few things going on here. We have this idea that it has to be like a special kind of man to enjoy a woman with some meat on her bones.
Which brings my major problem with Gloria's character in the whole film. People treating her like she's fat in the film. And like all the reviews, like, well, given her body size, she's like a 14 or a 16. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, just all kinds of feelings about her body size, which I'm like, girl, looking pretty fine, keeping it together.
Right.
And I also link it to kind of her character with the short hair, as we talked about earlier, when Bernie wants to cut her hair. So Gloria's, you know, egregiously overweight and has short hair. And so that, you know, ties her character story together of, you know, obviously she's undeserving of love. So it's kind of reasonable that she's boxed herself, you know, in with her son, and Bernie's decided she doesn't need intimacy because of her short hair and her body size. And it's like, sit the screech, y'all. But we are going very far down a really unproductive path here with Gloria.
Yes, exactly. Gloria is having a hard time maintaining her focus in this conversation.
I love this.
And we learned that her son wants to travel to Spain. with an organization called Up With The People, but she isn't sure that she wants to let him go. And Marvin is like, yeah, let him go. Like, he wants to go there instead of going to college. And so this comes up a little bit later, but she leaves and she's excited that he's watching her walk away. And it's a cute little scene, which is,
it is very cute.
Watching me walk away. And then she turns around and she's like, oh, he is. Yes.
I do want to say, though, we were talking about the kind of lack of exhale references in the film Waiting to Exhale, and Whitney mm-hmm. Houston's character is kind of the only reference we get. But we do, in this moment, as you mentioned, Gloria is kind of taken away by, you know, Marvin and him being in her life, and everything kind of slows down and the music kind of swells and we just hear her breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate, again, that reference to breath and overall, you know, how that ties to the characters in the film. But I appreciate this moment that she kind of has where she zones out and mm-hmm. she's feeling something.
Yeah. Yeah. And we even see, I don't know if you caught this, a flower that was dead at the beginning of the movie in Gloria's window. And now how the flower is blooming and healthy.
Love that. Did not notice.
Yeah. And to me, this comes across as like hope. A little bit, and also like the spirit of moving on.
Uh-huh. And just regenerating. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I never noticed that symbolism before now, but yeah, it's pretty clear. So yeah, we're at a, it looks like some type of preliminary divorce hearing where the judge grants Bernie $3,000 per month until they can review the rest of like the documentation or whatever. So it's not the final decree or anything. That's kind of a meantime situation. Bernie is pissed off and confronts John because the mortgage itself is $5,000. And John is like, well, you should have settled for the $300,000, but you wanted to play hardball. And it's like, this is the same man that was like, I'll take care of my kids.
Yeah, your message is bumbling a bit there. Yes. But I will point out, Bernie looks fly in her little slender coat mini skirt thing. Mm-hmm. And just looking, and yeah, dude is looking so smug. And really, I want to burn the mustache off of his face in the scene. I don't know. In my notes, I wrote die in all capitals with lots of exclamation points. He makes me very angry in this scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Bernie calls him an Uncle Tom, and it's like water off a duck's back to him. Again, she cannot get under this man's skin. Like,
he's like, you kind of spot on with that. Mm-hmm. I'll own that. Yeah, I'm an Uncle Tom.
And she's still like very emotionally raw, and he is emotionally dead. It's hard to watch him be so unbothered.
That is why I wanted to burn the mustache off.
Yes. And so next up, we see Bernie go to what appears to be a hotel bar for a drink. This feels a little bit random. And she ends up meeting a man named James Wheeler, who is played by a young Wesley Snipes
arrives in this film. Yes. Joy.
Yes. So he sits right next to her and she is like not into it. She clearly is not having a good day.
Well, she's not into it because his opening line is slimy as all get out. I haven't seen anything as splendid as you since I've been here. Sorry, no.
It is, yeah, his first line was pretty cringeworthy. And she's had a rough day. And so he's trying to strike up a conversation. She's not really feeling it. And he's like, you know, I just came here to have a drink after a series of meetings. And I'm looking forward to going home to my wife. Which I guess is his way of saying, like, I'm not trying to
pick you up. Right. Nice try. But I am.
Yes. Yes. When he asks her why she's alone, she's like, I'm getting a divorce. Okay. Like,
papers out on the table. Off. This is where we are. Exactly.
And she's like, I'm pissed off that I didn't have a plan B. And so James starts to compliment her and calls her a fighter and that she is brave because she has taken John's best shot and she's still here looking beautiful.
Yeah. This gets really tropey for me, like strong black mm-hmm. woman. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like that is what's so attractive to a man, like a woman mm-hmm. who can take a beating.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. And so James reveals that he is dealing with his own marital issues because his wife is dying of breast cancer. And so he relates to Bernie, but in a different way. And so I think this little piece of vulnerability kind of warms Bernie up a little bit. And so he buys her another drink and they presumably have more of a conversation.
And they get some decent chemistry going on the screen. Like I get that it is a joke that the scene is very cinematic to me. It's, you know, if anybody is in the filmmaking world, it's like your classic shot reverse shot. This is like, I've lit this exercise so many times back in film school, and it's gorgeously lit, honestly, like very soft with nice, you know, edge lights on folk. So it's a very like classic cinema setup scene, a man and a woman in a bar with this kind of evening light. So it succeeds well on this kind of epic cinema level, and they do mm-hmm. get into a dynamic, which is cozy. So appreciated on a lot of levels.
Yeah, I agree. They do have like a decent chemistry with each other. It's nice there. To see. Mm-hmm. Unlike Michael and Robin.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the few scenes in the film where like there's something happening and it's not just like, what is it? What? Help. Like, yes. These characters are like crossing each other, you know, like ships in the night. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, in this next scene, we see Savannah and Kenneth. If we remember, Kenneth is the Allstate guy who's like, hey, I'm coming into town next month. Like, and so we see Savannah's house. The inside of Savannah's house is this vibrant bluish purple. Yeah. I was like, I love this. I would never put it in my home. I love it.
Love to come over.
Yes, yes. So she answers the door and it's Kenneth, again, the Allstate man, who's in town for a conference and also there to relight an old flame. They hug each other. They say hi. They go for a walk in
the University Village. I am so sure that like it was giving me University Village vibes. It's like an upscale outdoor shopping mall in North Seattle. And I was like, yeah. And they're talking about Saks Fifth Avenue and there's a fountain in front of the Saks Fifth Avenue. I was like, yeah, it's U Village. I'm there.
Yeah. So yeah, they talk about their lives and careers, and then they finally get down to talking about like their relationship. They both seem to disagree on how their relationship ended. It's actually not very clear to me either. Neither of them can kind of explain it. But Kenneth says that for 7 years, he stayed with his wife because she got pregnant and then they got married. But
that's so honorable of you, Kenneth. You are such a big man. Wow.
Yes. But Savannah's the only woman that he's ever loved.
Please.
And I'm like, these men, like, do not vary from the script. In the next scene, Savannah and Kenneth are in Savannah's bedroom and they dance and they do adult activities that actually seem mutually satisfactory. So, you know, he might be married, but at least the sex isn't bad. So,
oh my Lord. And you get these cute little intimate, mm-hmm. slow, delicate close-ups again and the Lazy Susan effect, which I, mm-hmm. again, focused around Savannah's character. It gives me the little warmies. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was well done. Next up, we see Bernie and James. They go into a hotel room and appear to be considering sleeping together. James admits that he hasn't slept with anyone in a year because his wife has been ill. And they're a little bit awkward with each other, but not awkward like Michael and Robin.
Thankfully.
James does some confessions and he's like, oh, remember how you said like your, you know, husband left you for a white woman? Like, my wife is a white woman. And Bernie, it seems a little disappointed, but kind of isn't tripping. And is actually
I think it brings some growth for her that she's kind of taking a half step back and seeing things in a little bit different light. Like, that's how I interpret that moment. It's like, oh, okay. I was all pissed off, but like, okay, black men can love white women. Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the piece that most resonated for me in the moment was about how James talked about how much he loved his wife and how he would never leave her, and that there might be an assumption that because she is sick is the reason why he's sticking around, but it's not.
It's not that.
Right. And so Bernie is like, somebody used to feel that way about me. So it feels like a moment where she's experiencing a loss of like, I'm here with this man who actually loves someone the way I want it to be loved.
You give me the chills. Very true.
Yeah.
It's like, it's an honest moment. And I feel this film overall struggles with some honest moments. Like there's a lot of spectacle around the relationships between men and women, and often sometimes into hyperbole or just like overplaying, like the scenes with Robin and Michael in bed and you know, where it's overplayed to some degree. And there we really get some grounded honesty and some thoughtfulness in this scene that is refreshing.
Yeah. And Bernie says it hurts like hell, which is the title of the song that's playing in the background by Aretha Franklin. And Bernie grabs his hand and she lays her head on his shoulder. And when she asks, like, what do you want to do tonight? He says, make tonight beautiful. And whatever that meant in this moment, they fall asleep next to each other. It's nothing sexual. They are just kind of laying in bed. One of them is holding the other and one of them is being held. And they have
spoon
this
all night. Yeah, and I have seen interpretations. Some people think that they do sleep together. And I'm like, no.
I don't get
that. They spooned. Yeah. They just spooned and it was kind of delicate and intimate and sweet. Mm-hmm. And what they both needed, but appropriate.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, personally, I wouldn't be okay with my husband spooning a lady that he met at the bar. Personally.
In the scope of the other stuff that married men be doing up in this film, spooning ain't half bad. I'm not thrilled to have my partner spooning other people either. But I was going to say, I did hear a joke and a grain of salt, but that Wesley Snipes got cast in this film as being a character who had a white wife because he just finished shooting Jungle Fever. I can see him in this role. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Yes. So I found it to be just this very sweet moment. And like you said, both of them got what they needed, right? He had a lack of intimacy from his sick wife. She had a lack of intimacy with her husband for years, basically. And so they both got what they needed in a way that felt like really sweet and for the most part appropriate.
It's a deeper level emotional complexity, I think, than a lot of the other man-woman dynamics in the film. Bernie gets almost all of it, I would say. Mm-hmm. Nah, Gloria gets some, but Robin and Savannah don't get a lot of emotional complexity with their male partners. So
I agree. Yeah. In a brief scene, we see Marvin, Tariq, and Gloria hanging out. They seem like a happy family. They're getting along pretty well.
What is the cheese joke? I don't get the cheese joke. Is there cheese on the sandwich? Ha 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 ha.
I don't know. I think it's a part of them all getting to know each other. Gregory Hines doesn't like cheese on his sandwich, and I guess Tariq does. I don't know.
If it's bringing them closer together, then that's wonderful.
Yes, they seem to be having a great time together. And so Tariq, who apparently plays the saxophone, plays Happy Birthday because it's Gloria's birthday. And her girls come over and they throw this little nice get together with just the four of them. They're drinking, they're eating cake. They each do a toast to Gloria in their own way. And we find out that Gloria has had a 10-year man drought, as Robin puts it. And it's like, oh, wow. Okay. They help her blow out her candles, and eventually the birthday party turns into a pity party.
Well, first of all, a whole bunch of people cashed on how Gloria's blowing out her candles, because she does give it a little spit. She's like, and everybody's
And
I also love, I do not believe this is considered an official part of the soundtrack, but that gorgeous song by Minnie Riperton, Loving You, is playing in the background. I love that song, and I love this. The song is very delicate, and then just the women in this very calm, intimate space with that song comes together nicely for me.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And so the party goes on. The ladies have been drinking a bit and the mood changes. We go from celebrating to like not celebrating. Bernie is like especially upset and sad, right? And so Savannah is just kind of talking. Nobody's really acknowledging her. And she's like, you know what's sad? Not one of us has a man. And it's like, why can't that just be okay? Like,
right. The other thing, too, I think Savannah pushed Bernie into her place, because I forget the second after the Minnie Riperton song, there's another song. I don't remember what song it is, but the lyrics are, you know, not an angry, but a woman who's been hurt talking about her hurt. And Savannah's like, wow, you know, the folk who write these songs, do you think they really been through some of that such horrible stuff that they're singing about? And you're looking at Bernie, who is just like flaming on the inside, so hurt and so upset. And like, you know, as Savannah's kind of naively like, wow, I guess some people in this world really hurt. And Bernie's like, you know, she finally speaks up as this is another gorgeous camera moment as we're kind of Savannah, very kind of young and free and naive and not burdened by what Bernie's gone through. And, you know, Bernie slowly comes into the frame and you just see her almost immobile. She's smoking and you can see fire inside of her as she's just hurting and hurting and hurting. And she finally speaks up at the end. But just the contrast between kind of naive Savannah and Bernie's just pain is really beautiful in this setting of a birthday party that's supposed to be joyful.
Yeah. And so Bernie is like, I want to call John and talk to his mistress and curse her out.
Yeah.
Robin is with it. She's like, call her.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, let's go.
And so they do call her. And when the woman picks up, Robin curses her out and Gloria has to put an end to it and hangs up the phone. And she's like, come on now. And Bernie is pissed off and she's trying to call back because the phone got hung up. And Gloria is like, this is childish. She has to disconnect the receiver. The phone. I don't know.
Yeah.
She has to disconnect the phone. And I feel like this scene is a little bit weird because Bernie is upset and she's saying, I'm hurt and I have some things I want to get off of my chest. And then suddenly she's like, what happened to the music? She's like, this is supposed to be a party.
Yeah. I feel her. It's weird. But like she's caught up in her misery and kind of swirling. And then they all swirl. I think the end of the scene is kind of sweet because they all kind of descend into drunken musing that makes less and less sense of like the funny stuff they're saying. And like it just kind of slips into oblivion.
Yeah. And then the next thing we know, they're dancing together to Creep by TLC. Right. And then next, they're all like laying right next to each other and they chat more about their men problems. And the conversation is silly and it's fun, but we get to see their friendship and how they're all funny and supportive and it's sweet. And they all end up falling asleep.
More of this. Like more of this. I think the film missed one thing that frustrates me about the film is the relationships are so divided out. Mm-hmm. That you get Savannah and Bernie, you get, you know, Gloria and Bernie, Savannah and Robin, but these kind of level setting moments where we're all together kind of sharing in our mutual, you know, connection to this craziness. I miss those moments. So this moment in the film was important and it spoke a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Tyreek leaves in the morning and sees that all the ladies fell asleep in the living room. So they had a good time.
It is so cute.
Yes. And so Kenneth is back, y'all. Kenneth comes back to Phoenix. Savannah picks him up from the airport.
Hooray! And,
yes. Savannah gets out of bed to call her mother while Kenneth is asleep. And she's kind of whispering a little bit because Savannah, her energy is off. And you can tell that she feels some conflict around what's going on with Kenneth, right? And so she calls her mother and she doesn't want to say what's going wrong with her and instead ask how her mom is doing. And so her mom reveals that her food stamps have been cut and she only has $67 left to her name. And so Savannah is like, Mom, I'm going to send you some money, Western Union, in the morning. And if you need anything, let me know. So there's this.
If you Zelle Savannah, it might be faster.
Yes.
I'm just saying. Got Venmo too. But you know.
Yeah, there's this sweet moment that they have with each other of like this supportive daughter being there for her mother, even though they are in disagreement a little bit.
That's true. It shows, again, the full scope of their relationship. And it's not just the nagging mom telling daughter she needs a man. And that's the end of their relationship. And it explains, too, like throughout the film, Savannah's on the phone with her mom. So it helps you not be like, if your mom is only pulling you down, telling you how terrible you are that you don't have a man, like, why are you so close to her? Why do you keep calling? And this reminds us that they do have a broader dynamic and there is more to their relationship than just, you know, mom. But when she offers her mom, like, get anything you want, a knitting class, a girdle, you treat yourself. I'm like, a knitting class or a girdle? Is that what I'm supposed to do with what you're sending me at Western Union? Okay. Thank you, honey.
Yes. The thing that I'm thinking about when it comes to the mom, and we can talk more about this later because I didn't put this in my notes. It's literally coming to my head right now. Is this supposed to be any indication of why the mom is so insistent that Savannah have a man so that when she gets older, she does not end up?
Oh, for sure. That to me is like the face value purpose of the mom. That is what the mom is driven by, so that Savannah does not become an old single lady like her mom is. Like, for me, that is the whole narrative of her mom's character. And it's very, which is so limiting for Savannah, like, you are not capable of becoming anything different than who I am, which, you know, plenty of parents put that on their kids. Like, you got to do this and that. Otherwise, you'll end up like me. Like, no, I'm a different person. It's not going to go exactly the same for me.
Yeah, I hear that. So, yeah, Savannah's mom mentions, like, oh, Kenneth's getting a divorce. Has he reached out to you? And Savannah lies and it's like, no, I haven't heard from him. I'm not sure if I can trust him. And Savannah's mom is like, trust? Who needs that?
You're right, Mom. Totally overrated.
Yes. Savannah's mom's philosophy is basically get a man by any means, okay?
That is kind of the larger philosophy of the film.
Yes. Basically, yes. So Kenneth, the next morning, is out on the patio lying to his wife about his whereabouts as Savannah is bringing him breakfast.
This man is so evil. Like, everything that comes out of his mouth is just evil.
Mm-hmm. He better be glad he has that velvety voice. It makes the BS sound better.
That's what gets us.
Yes. Next up, Marvin and Gloria have a conversation about Tyreek. They are in disagreement about what Tyreek should do with his future. And Marvin seems frustrated about why Gloria is being so reluctant about sending him off to Spain. And he's like, you're clinging to your son. And so Gloria is like, well, I was coming to you about all this because, like, Tyreek doesn't really have a father figure in his life and you all have been hanging out quite a bit and maybe you could convince him to stay in Arizona. But Marvin is like, I'm not on board with that. And Gloria gets upset.
It's nice the way he pulls it up. You know, she's like, I thought you might be able to talk some sense into Tyreek. Mm-hmm. And Marvin's like, I don't think it's Tyreek who needs sense talking, you know?
Right.
It's you. He doesn't say it, but it's pretty direct. Yeah. And Gloria does not take kindly to Marvin kind of speaking up and speaking his mind. And it's true what he's saying. And it speaks to Gloria's whole kind of hang up of, you know, the most important man in her life is Tyreek. Mm-hmm. And if she can't see beyond that and let him become who he needs to be, like, it is going to be all downhill from here. And Marvin, I think, in a way says, like, he doesn't say this, but it comes across like, if you can't let go of Tariq, you can never be with me. Like, mm-hmm. that's the way it's all going to come together. So take a half step back, Lori. Think about what you're doing.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of single moms have some issues with making their children emotional husbands.
Yeah, I would be that mom. Don't ever let me get single. I would be that mom to my children.
Yeah, I feel like it's a strange dynamic, but it happens often. So Gloria is not the only one. Next up, we see Russell and Robin. This scene is weird. We're at Robin's apartment and Russell is late. He's supposed to be breaking things off with his wife tonight. And I was like, oh, snap, Russell's married?
Yeah.
Everybody married.
Okay. Everybody married. He starts out the scene with a gaslight. Like,
yes.
Off to the races. What took you so long? I wasn't gone that long.
When she asked about like their separation or divorce, he's dodgy and he's like, hey, let me get them pajamas.
It's complicated.
Why does he have pajamas at her house? And he's like, you know, you don't just divorce somebody and DocuSign and, you know, it's over immediately, basically. And she surmises that he slept with his wife, and then he gets defensive, like, I don't want to be pressed about what I'm doing with my own wife. And it's like, what?
This is so off the rails, this conversation. There is nothing that is okay about this conversation. Not nothing.
Or the fact that he's still in her house after talking to her that way.
Putting his pajamas on out of her dresser.
Robin kind of backs down a little bit, saying, well, you know, we won't have much time to spend together. And I'm like, what's crazy is that when it comes to Robin, particularly thinking about Berta Dean's relationship, she's about it. She's cursing people out on the phone. She's mad. She's pissed. But in this situation, when she should rightfully be upset, she's not.
That is funny. I did not pick up on that. When it's other people, she's ready to scream into the phone for Bernadine, but mm-hmm. worse stuff is happening up in her face. And she's like, maybe if I just get to know him, things would be different.
I can change him.
Yeah. Yes. Oof, that is very true.
Yeah. Yeah. Robin ends up getting a call from Troy, of all people.
I love that. I love that. Who was that on the phone? Savannah?
Oh, I suggest you tell your little boyfriend not to call past 11 o'clock.
Who
first off,
do you think you are?
Right.
Just left with your wife, came over to my house, not even trying to sleep with me, and then judging me. Who calling me on my phone in my house? Married mm-hmm. man.
Yes. You got some nerve. Yes. Robin is like, oh, I can't believe he's jealous. But she, of course, is not. This whole situation is not sitting right with her. Yeah. These relationships are just awful. They're just
off
so
the charts.
Bad.
Off the charts.
They're so bad. Yes. In the next scene, we see Gloria and Tariq at church. Long story short, Tariq learns from the pastor that Gloria is going to allow him to go to Spain for Up With The People. They both seem very happy. And this is an evolution in Gloria's character where she's learning to let go.
As a mama, it brought tears to my eyes. Like, I got choked up in that scene. I was like, oh, that is so sweet. And how she eventized, you know, letting him know.
Yeah.
I also love this scene because it's a cultural moment. I remember growing up in church and it was like, and all the prayers out to Lula, who's had hip surgery. Amen. Yeah. Like all the sick and shut in roster that go through mm-hmm. it every Sunday. So a wonderful yeah. scene. Lots of feelies.
Yes. Next up, we see Savannah and Robin. They're at a park talking, and Robin tells a story of a woman who was in a similar situation to Savannah, who, you know, is, of course, dating a married man. She says that this woman uprooted her life for a man and found out that she was pregnant when she arrived in her new town. The man dumped her and said that, you know, his kids would be too mad if he left now. That woman ended up having an abortion, and the man never left his wife. It was funny because Savannah was like, well, did he leave his wife? And she's like, girl, what you think?
Right. And then, like, do you need me to tell you the punchlines? Infer, sis. Infer.
Right. And then when Savannah's like, well, where did you hear this story? Like from Sally, Jesse, Raphael, Ricky Lake, whatever right. show she said. And Robin was like, well, I've never been on Ricky Lake. And mm-hmm. this is actually her
beautiful
story.
Little dialogue moment. Again, yeah. it's like there's not a whole bunch of like deep and beautiful moments. But, mm-hmm. you know, exactly. Robin has that wisdom. That she selectively puts out on the street and rarely yes. uses for herself. But at least Savannah could benefit from it.
Yes. I do also want to offer that I love that these women are from different age groups and mm-hmm. that they are able to lean on each other in different ways.
I would have loved to see that take more space up on the screen.
Yeah,
just the complexity of their relationship is mm-hmm. beautiful. Yeah.
But yeah. Bernie is at home. She's a little bit sick, and her daughter is in her room delivering the mail, and she receives a letter from James, Wesley Snipes. And so he says in this letter that he thinks about her a lot, and that he believes that he fell in love in one night, and that whatever he feels for Bernie does not undercut his feelings for his own wife. James also says that she has changed his life. And all the while, Bernie is like reading this, you know, letter and is getting emotional. And her daughter just keeps asking questions.
I love the scene. Sorry, it's maybe just as a parent. Like, you know, Bernie's having some real grown up emotional stuff in the letter. Mm-hmm. And her daughter's like rooting through her stuff. Mommy, is freak a bad word?
Yes.
Because Johnny at school said that freak is a bad word. And you can't dismiss your kids. Like, whatever yeah. you're doing, like, what? Is freak a... No, honey, that's fine. I mean, it's not great. Because Johnny said, you know, you are the only person... I love you just as much as... You have to process mm-hmm. on multiple levels, like, constantly. So I just appreciated that just nuance of a very everyday thing for parents of the just yeah. the depth of the exchange in the letter. And then just this, you know... Very, you know, it's your child, so you can't dismiss it. But like, what are you asking me about? A freak? So really beautiful, really beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I enjoy that scene. But Bernie and her daughter, after she finishes reading this letter, I wonder if they ever like reconnected, just like in like an alternate timeline. Like if Bernie and James. That's a good question.
I feel like I felt that they did when I watched it. I was like, okay, this is going to continue in some way. This isn't the end. Yeah, I felt that.
Yeah. But yeah, Bernie and her daughter admire the rain in their little, you know, skylight windows mm-hmm. on the roof.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Bernie says that rain is God's way of making sure that everything keeps growing, which is a hint that all of the ladies are experiencing some type of evolution. Mm. And this is another scene that's probably considered iconic.
Whitney! Tell it like it is.
Savannah and Kenneth have a chat. And by this time, Savannah has taken off the rose-colored glasses. And it's kind of really seeing things for what they are. Kenneth comes and sits down with her and he's like, well, my daughter has chicken pox and my wife is calling me all the time. And I'm like, okay, instead of being home helping with your sick daughter, you are across the country messing around with your mistress.
He says the nastiest stuff. Like, you're yes! the most important thing to me. And that's what Whitney calls it. She's mm-hmm. like, you are scum. Rose-colored yes. glasses on the floor.
Yes. And he contrasts the most important thing to me thing, but he's like, well you're just going to have to wait for me to get to the point where it's the right time for me to divorce my wife because my daughter thinks she's going to have a little brother or sister soon. And it's like, what?
If that's what matters to you, then what? You know, Savannah just calls it. She calls it. She mm-hmm. honestly, she kind of picks through everything that is wrong about him in one very short mm-hmm. slicing dialogue. Yeah.
Monologue. Yes. And she calls him the scum of the effing earth. She's like, I'm not finna fall for any of this okie doke anymore and waiting around, you know, while he has his cake and eats it too.
A lovely thing in that dialogue is as he's just talking, I don't know if you notice, she says nothing for the first, he's like, mm-hmm. you know, my kids are sick and all this and blah, blah, blah. And she's just like, mm-hmm. Like just making yep. fun, and I'm just, oh, that sounds so talented.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so hearing the Allstate spokesperson say effing my brains out is freaking hilarious. He's like, oh, you suddenly grew a conscience. You weren't thinking about that when you were effing my brains out. And he's like, you know, you weren't concerned about being an a-hole to my wife previously. Hey. And so Savannah takes accountability and she says, you know what? I wasn't thinking about that. And I was a butthole. But the difference between you and me is that I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
And so when he tries to protest, she's like, I'm not mad. Drinks are on you. And she knocks over his glass.
Drinks are on you. That is so like 80s, 90s. I don't know. That's, I don't know. That struck me as a very time capsule with the drinks are on you. And I'm going to spill your drink on you. Get it?
Yes. So later, Savannah gets a very scolding call from her mom. She's at work, so she has to go to like a little private area. And her mom is like, you broke Kenneth's little adulterous heart. And Savannah is like, I'm tired of you trying to tell me what to do with my life. And if you love Kenneth so much, why don't you freaking marry him?
She's I love like, that.
You don't ask me about any of my other interests. You are only concerned about me dating someone and finding someone. And of course, her mom is like, he's a good man, Savannah.
He's a good man. He's just in a bad situation. I love how marriage with two children is a bad situation. I just have to keep coming. I'm in a bad situation. Check that out.
Right, right. You're married with kids. You have a career that allows you to travel quite often. You also have a mistress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You had the privilege in your career to decide to take a pay cut to try another track. Like, you got some power, girl. You've been working.
Right. And so Savannah gets really mad, of course, and she hangs up the phone on her mother after she tells him, you can marry Kenny. You marry him yourself, okay? But she calls back to apologize to her mother, and her mom is like, I don't want you to end up like me, alone and broke.
That's what this is all about.
Yes, basically. And it's like, okay. You'll be all right. You have support. And it's really interesting how women can build community, and it doesn't have to be centered around a man. Even though she is alone and living on her own, she still has the support of her daughter. Like, women have the ability to create networks and create community, and it doesn't have to be you need a man to support you.
I love that you say that, because for me, that is, I think they find that at the end of the film. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning of the film, that's not something that they would have embraced or thought about or considered. While Savannah fights back against her mom about it, she still was, you know, getting played. You know, before she gets to the speech with Kenneth where she's like, I have changed. You know, I'm not that person anymore. So I think they all kind of grow into that space.
Yeah, I agree. So in the next scene, we get the final divorce settlement. Bernie receives $1.5 million in a savings account. Woo-hoo! She gets the house that they live in.
Don't you get the winery too?
Acapulco.
Yeah, oh, that's right. She scored.
She gets $500,000 in stocks and bonds and a Mercedes station wagon. And Bernie got way more than the $300,000 that he was talking about earlier. And she is happy. She even shakes hands with John. And while he seems a little bit annoyed that he lost the case, he does have what appears to be some respect for her. Back to what you were saying earlier about her having more dignity in this space. Mm-hmm. There is something about her that feels moved on and removed from that like highly emotional state that she was in before.
Yeah. But she still, once she turns her back, she goes and she's like, woo! And she's like screaming as she dances out of the courtroom. It's like, okay, all right. You have a right to be a little immature. Yes. All good. I got you.
Yes. And then in another scene, Russell comes back. He shows up on Robin's doorstep saying, you know, I finally left my wife. But Robin is like, okay, I'm happy for you.
Yeah, you enjoy that.
Yeah. He finds that she is reading a book that suggests that she is with child. She does admit that she is pregnant and says that she and her baby don't need him. So he can get to step in.
We don't need you in our lives, Trippin'.
Yes. So yeah, she plans on having this baby and raising the child without Russell.
Which is another, you know, a little social commentary there that a Black woman may choose to raise her child independently. And it is not the choice of a man leaving his woman that always would leave a woman in that situation. So like the woman having a choice in that situation, I appreciate it. See it on screen.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's a good point. Yeah, and this next scene, Gloria goes to visit Marvin at his house.
Marvin's woodworking. Talking much. Y'all notice how much he worked wood in this movie? He's always working on a chair or a table or a birdhouse. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, a gazebo, always, yeah, working on something. But they haven't been talking much lately, and Gloria says that she misses him, and she apologizes, and when she gets ready to leave, Marvin is like, oh, you know, come sit down and talk. And so we find out that Tyreek left for Spain that day, and that he wouldn't even let her take her to the airport, and of course she's experiencing that loss and the empty nest, and she's like, admits that Tyreek was like her companion.
He's been the man in my life.
He's gone. Yeah. Right, right. She kind of gave up on finding someone. And Gloria thanks Marvin for opening her eyes to the fact that she was being very clingy to her son. And Marvin is like, I feel like you don't think that you're worthy, or, you know, that you're worthy to be loved. And he tells her that he loves her. She's a little bit in disbelief at first, but then they kiss on a rainy day in Arizona. They have quite a few rainy days for this to be Arizona.
Are you sure this wasn't shot in Seattle? I was noting that as well. Like, does it rain in Arizona?
I'm sure it does, but probably not this often. But the story is being told over a year, so I guess.
Maybe they had two or three days.
Yeah. You know. Yeah, I guess. So they make out. So apparently they're a couple. And it's New Year's Eve again now.
And that DJ comes back. The DJ.
Yes.
I got a vent for 30 seconds on the DJ. First of all, when I first heard him, I was like, this reminds me of Jim Carrey doing the DJ voice on Don FM. I do not know if you've listened to the Weeknd album. Mm-hmm. Don FM came out maybe, what, in 2022? It's about a year and a half ago. But there's this DJ voice that is so similar to the voice in the film that goes in between the songs. And it's just weird and uncomfortable. And it just, it like, ugh. I was not happy to have the DJ come back again at the end of the film.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I don't think I felt any particular way about it, but I hear what you're saying. But it's New Year's Eve. A year has passed. Things have changed dramatically over the course of this year. And the ladies are in the car jamming to It Might Be You by Roberta Flack. And the ladies drive to a spot in the desert. It has a nice view. They start a fire and they do the countdown to the new year together. We see fireworks go off in the background and the ladies, you know, love on each other and hug on each other as Count On Me by Whitney Houston and Cece Winans plays in the background. And that is how we end the movie. You have any thoughts on that final scene?
Whew, a couple. So first of all, I have to laugh when Savannah is talking about, she makes a reference to an old film that Dustin Hoffman is in called Tootsie. And mm-hmm. she calls it Tookie, which cracked me up. And I had this moment of, you know, so many times in my life watching films with Black people, when they reference things in white pop culture, and like, you know, Tootsie's a very big film, classic film. But I was like, I wish she could have referenced a Black film, you know, like that little mm-hmm. tear down my cheek. And then the end of the film, I appreciate it being wrapped up kind of a year cycle and bringing back some mm-hmm. of the elements from the beginning of the film to really wrap it up. That slow motion business of like, ick, like, is my DVD player broken? What is happening? Totally unnecessary. And then just the whole, yeah, the effects just kind of killed the end of the film. And it seemed a little like we pulled over along the side of the road and made a bonfire. I didn't understand what was happening, but it seemed like sweet. Like, we drove out into the desert. It seemed like a sweet concept, but it was kind of weird and sudden to me. And then just loaded with like weird effects. Like, I think the effects took over and I lost the mm-hmm. characters. Like, it could have come together just around the characters, but yeah, it just, the effects took over. So I was like, oh, it's over and we're in the desert and it's in slow motion and then we dissolve. I didn't get it. So it's a little abrupt for me. I think overall it was a little abrupt and then the technology took over and I was like, what is happening? Okay, credits. So.
Oh, that's interesting. I had never really even thought about the effects. It's like, oh, slow motion at the end, fireworks. Cool. Yeah.
Good. I overthought
starting
it.
Starting the new year.
Yeah, I overthought it for sure. But I was like, what happened?
No worries. Well, they're going into this new year better off than they were before. And interestingly enough, Gloria seems to be the only person starting the new year with a man.
Yeah.
So it's not even like everyone necessarily got what they wanted.
And he's not married.
Yes.
It's a very unique situation for one of those women to find themselves in.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah. Well, y'all, that's the end of Waiting to Exhale. And at the end of every review, we ask the same two questions. Is it worth a rewatch? And if it holds up today? Andrea, what do you think?
I will watch it again just for some of the, you know, the scene with Troy and Robin on the balcony and Whitney at the end, just letting him have it. Mm-hmm. Oh, oh, scum of the earth. There's a couple moments that are beautiful. And then Angela Bassett, just thank you for helping me understand the improvisation when she tears mm-hmm. through the stuff and puts it in the car and sets it on fire. Like in the fire department, that dialogue, there's a couple dialogues that take it away. And I will definitely be watching it again. It doesn't hold up. There's the constant narrative that women need a man. Mm-hmm. The gay characters mm-hmm. having a real hard time. Like, it doesn't, I appreciate, honestly, I was surprised and appreciated that there were gay characters represented in the film. Like that.
And more than one.
Yeah, two. Mm-hmm. That to me was overwhelming. But I feel like they didn't address it in any way. They weren't trying to say it's okay. They just put it out there and were like, y'all deal with it. You know, y'all figure out what you, but we're going to put some stuff out there. So kind of non-conclusive. So yeah, dated in a lot of ways. And just, yeah, the notion of Gloria being fat, you know, the women just revolving door of married men. There's, I don't know. Go ahead.
Yeah, I hear that. I basically, for the most part, agree with you. I love this movie. I don't just personally, and
no shade.
We'll always rewatch it. Yeah, I just, like you said, the iconic scenes, the acting is really good. It's a bunch of Black folks that we love. You know, the music is really good. Again, like the piece about it being like this time capsule of capturing like the hair and the fashion and the technology even. I love witnessing, you know, that piece of it, and is great for a rewatch. And like I said, I rewatch it a couple of times a year. The iconic scenes are still really magical. I'm just really entertained by this movie while I rewatch it. But when it comes to if it holds up, it's mostly no, But there are pieces of it that hold up just for kind of like nostalgia's sake and like for the fact that it's like a part of the Black zeitgeist. But like it's mostly no, right? And it's for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned before, right? Like the story being hyper focused on the romantic relationships in the lives of the women and how everything in their lives revolves around those relationships, yeah. from their level of self-esteem to even their relationships with their own children and parents. Like everything is like centered. Their careers centered around men. And it's like, it doesn't have to be so male-centric, and it could have focused more on their friendship together.
Bless one.
And the support that they provided to each other. These ladies were all in different stages of their lives, which I loved, but each of them compromised on like a number of things and didn't really have good boundaries. Like, and a lot of it was quite toxic. And so I think in that way, it doesn't necessarily hold up. And I feel like there's a shift with like younger women who are getting married later or not at all, choosing whether or not they want to have children. They're decentering men from their lives in order to focus more on themselves. And so I think in that way, this movie really doesn't hold up. There's also the use of the F word with six characters as a slur. It also has a male producer. So that piece doesn't necessarily hold up so well either. The depiction of Joseph as a gay man is very tropish. So yeah, there are a lot of elements of this film that are like not okay today and not necessarily woke or appropriate these days. But I can accept the movie for what it is because it's reflective more so of the time period that it came from. And so that's why I can still rewatch it and like recognize that like some of this stuff is like not okay. A lot of it, most of it is technically not okay. Yeah. So yeah, next up, we're going to talk really briefly about the ratings. Now over at Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave this film 56% out of 100 and the audience gave it 79%. Andrea, what do you think about these ratings?
Ouch. It makes me curious initially if the Rotten Tomatoes rating was given, you know, in 1995. I don't remember when Rotten Tomatoes started exactly, but that's a little harsh. Definitely a lack of understanding. I think as a Black woman, more the film resonates with me than it would your average Rotten Tomato rater. It's a little harsh, but I think, you know, seven in the 70th percentile starts to get into a little bit more of an honest space. I wouldn't shoot it up to 80.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the reasons why I wanted to start this podcast was to give things that felt significant to me more flowers. Because like you said, on Rotten Tomatoes, oftentimes the people who are rating these things are not the target audience. They don't understand the cultural significance of the film. And they are thinking of it more from like a technical standpoint, as opposed to the emotions that you get or like are elicited from the film.
Or a Hollywood standard. Like, you know, this is what Hollywood films should, this is how they're good, this is how they're not. So this wasn't good. Yeah.
Right, right. And so I believe that I'm like more aligned with the audience score. I might push it up to like an 83 just because of like how meaningful this film is to me and the Black community and how quotable it is and the iconic scenes. Like to me, I would push it up to the early 80s. But yeah, those are my thoughts. You all, thank you so much for listening to this review of Waiting to Exhale from 1995 here at Sup Media Reviews. I want to say a special thanks to Andrea for joining me today. Did you have a good time?
Oh my Lord, I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, of course. Now listeners, let me know what you think about this movie. Does it hold up for you? Did you rewatch it recently? Share your thoughts with us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Next week, we'll be concluding our Women's History Month series with a review of the 1997 to 2002 animated series Daria. You don't want to miss it. Peace out.
Na, 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 na. That's going to be my head all day.
Thanks for listening to Sup Media Reviews. I hope you enjoyed our trip down memory lane just as much as I did. If you have any suggestions for movies or TV shows you'd like me to review next, or if you just want to share your thoughts on today's episode,
you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Pinterest at Sup Media Reviews
and on supmediareviews.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, please leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps me improve the show and spread the word to new listeners. So until next time, peace out, home slices.